I want to turn to a quote from a piece from Holding the High Line from Mark Goodman, who does a fantastic job covering the Colorado Rapids. That whole crew over at Holding the High Line does a wonderful job. This is a quote from a piece that came out from Mark earlier as I'm recording on Tuesday, September 5th, saying, "The failures of this team seem to be on the shoulders of Josh Kroenke and KSE."
Altitude's undefeated.
Crack rainbow, punch it down, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of it.
I didn't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It is Tuesday, September 5th, 2023, and my name is Matt Pollard. Earlier today, the Colorado Rapids parted ways with four-year head coach Robin Fraser after Saturday's loss to RSL, which clinched the Rocky Mountain Cup for RSL again. We're getting another Porrick Smith presser tomorrow at time of recording. Joseph Samuelson is back with a bang on the Twitter machine, and HTHL is in its best run of form in podcast history in terms of shout-outs, thanks to Joe Lowry, amongst others who have appreciated and given credit to our work. Joining me now to provide some much-needed citations, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Oh, man. Are these, like, moving violation-type citations? That would be really, really good. Yeah, it's been an interesting one. Matt, how many Colorado Rapids managers have you and I survived at this point? There was Pablo Master.
Are we including interim managers?
Oh, yeah, always.
Pablo,
Steve, it's
Cookie,
Pablo.
Hudson.
Cook. Hudson.
Connor Casey. Robin Fraser makes five. Mark, I feel pretty confident that Chris Little is not going to be with the club come next preseason. So in theory, if HTHL makes it to January, Mark, we will be on the seventh Rapids manager since our pilot episode back in.
Seven for you, that's for the podcast. Eight for me as a commentator, because I started writing when the Rapids had yet to figure out, had just parted ways with Oscar Pareja, and we're trying to figure out what to do afterwards. And they were in this weird liminal space with Mastroeni, who, I don't know if you remember this, but he was named like a special technical advisor under for the new season under Pareja, and then Pareja quit, and they didn't do anything for 3 or 4 weeks, and like rumors swirled. But anyways, we're taking it back to the old school, so I'm on my eighth manager potentially, Matt. It's pretty weird.
You were saying before the podcast, Mark, and we've had a couple different iterations of this saying of like the part of our value or why, you know, our brand in staying around is our staying power, and the fact that you know, there's a lot of people who are going to disengage with the club, maybe come back in, you know, we're at the getting disappointed, and then we're not yet to the other side of the triangle, which is getting your hopes up necessarily. And part of our value, we're not the best Rapids content creators maybe, but we have been we've been around the longest, and we've been the most persistent. And the simple fact, Mark, that you and I will not clearly break up from this increasingly unhealthy relationship that might not be going anywhere is what gets us clout with people on Apple TV and with Joe Lowry and with other people as well in that regard, and allows us to hang around. And regardless of, as I mentioned at the end of last week's show, Mark, I'm increasingly not coming this from a fan standpoint, but just from a interest of understanding. And I think we can agree this is continuously, we have surpassed the 2019 Rapids bizarro season. The Rapids are interesting, but interesting in the way that grad school Matt would want to model the flame structure of a literal dumpster fire. That is where we are at. So there are tears in my eyes. There is soot formation that is going on, Mark. It's interesting. It's scientifically interesting. It's just really sad and destructive.
Yeah, the line that I used on you before was that we're the cockroaches of the Colorado Rapids podcasting ecosystem. we're not the best podcast around. We're just the one that outlasts everybody else. Being a manager who outlasts other people is valuable. You know, like I'm thinking of the manager of Minnesota who has they've called for his head multiple times and he seems to have survived nonetheless. Why am I blanking on the guy's name? Minnesota United's manager, Matt?
Adrian Heath.
Adrian Heath. Yeah, he's survived some narrow scrapes, but he's out living. You know, and that's I kind of thought, you know, and we'll get into it when we get into it, but I kind of thought that Robin Fraser was going to do just enough after July 4th that the team would say, you know, we're having a bad season. You're responsible for some of it. You're going to be fired at the end of the year. But what's the point of firing, you know, him with 7 games to go, 8 games to go? And the answer is, well, we weren't looking like we were ever going to win a game again, and everyone had lost hope. So it was time. It was time. But we'll get into it a little bit more as we get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, so I guess just really quickly, Mark, for the sake of completeness, Colorado Rapids this past Saturday at First America Field lose 2-0 to Real Salt Lake. 2 goals off of set pieces, 2 mistakes on those set pieces as well. Mark, I don't know that it's basically been the exact same game that we've seen for the better part of 2 months. Ralph Priso started. He wasn't particularly great. He wasn't the reason that the Rapids necessarily lost. Marco Ilicha needed to have done better on that direct free kick on that set piece late on in the first half. And then Steven Betisher loses the battle 1v1 with Chicho Arango, and Diego Rubio is in the area for a zonal marking on the front side of the post in the early minutes of the second half, and that gets the set piece goal. The Rapids had periods of play mark where I think they were decent with the ball, but fundamentally not a lot of XG, not a lot of chances created. Even though the scoreline was only 2-0, even though at halftime it was 1-0 as opposed to against LAFC and against Minnesota, it was, you know, the game was out of hand at that point. There was never a point where you felt like the Rapids were competitive or going to do something in that regard. I don't know, like, it's a moot point at this point because, like, we're not going to – there's no point in us diagnosing what Robin Fraser's done wrong further. It's what he's done wrong previously anyways, and it's no longer relevant because he's no longer here. And Chris Little – has now, you know, the full international break to get the club ready, maybe make some changes personnel or tactically to get ready for New England Revolution. Mark, we are going to see whether or not this team has a new coach bump and whether or not whether or not Robin Fraser was indeed a bigger problem than you or I think he was, and we're going to see whether or not this is truly a bottom group of players when you play New England Revolution at home or Seattle Sounders at home. If those two games were this week, Mark, like Wednesday, Saturday, I think we'd expect 2 spankings, at best maybe one of those being a 0-0 draw. Like, if they get absolutely drubbed in that, that's bad. And obviously you're talking about 2 teams that I have making the playoffs in MLS. We're going to see if there's a new coach bump and if Robin was the problem, but I'm getting way ahead of myself. Mark, any thoughts you want to say about the RSL game other than the very apt TIFO that we saw pregame?
Thanks. Yeah, the dumpster fire one. You know, the floating dumpster meme that everybody knows, and then someone added fire to the floating dumpster, that happened here in Pittsburgh, Matt. Fun fact. That's a true story. That happened in one of the runs in Pittsburgh where we had a flood, and that dumpster went floating. So
Or was it in a river, Mark?
Well, that was in one of our local creeks that runs out into one of the rivers. So, yeah. I actually, you know, it was funny. I was working on you gave me credit for doing an emergency back pass. I actually was working on a regular back pass this morning, just doing a let's break down specifically. I remember watching. Let me explain where all of it came from. I remember watching the match. I fell asleep at the 73rd minute, but I remember watching the match and saying to myself in the first half, these look like 11 guys running around who are not connected one to another. And I did not understand. I would have to go back and rewatch the previous 3 or 4 games to see if I was just picking up on something I hadn't noticed before, or whether this game was actually a cut below and a cut worse than the other games. I'm not really sure, and I'm not going to go back and watch more losing football that looks disjointed, but, like, I wasn't entirely right. It was just a specific number of plays. I think playing a 4-2-3-1 after playing other formations like a 3-4-3 and a 5-3-2 wasn't quite working for the Rapids. I also think there was just a lot of, you know, there was also, when they lined it up on paper, some people wrote it out, Foot Mob put it down as a 4-4-2, which demonstrates just how out of position several of the players were. You know, I think there was a lot of trouble trying to figure out how Tavares, Bassett, Prizzo, and Connor Ronan were going to combine. Like, I looked at it when the announcement got made about how they were starting, and I was like, have these guys played together? And if they have played together, what's that going to look like? And then they started to play together, and it did not work. Like, the midfield just kept kind of, like, smushing together. There were a lot of times where either Illich or Wilson decided to bypass the midfield. There was, like, one play they were going to, which is a very old-school, desperate Robin Fraser, and it used to be a Pablo Mastroeni staple, which is skip the midfielders, lump the ball up to the striker, have him win a 50-50. By the way, this was, they used to do this with Jack McBean all the time. Lump the ball up to the striker, have him knock it backwards to one of the two midfielders who's running on, and then create a rush where you have two wide forwards to spray the ball wide out to. But unfortunately, you don't have anyone centrally in a dangerous place to, and you know, they did that a bunch this game, and it worked a little, but mostly it didn't. And mostly, you took what was a very good possession, or a likely possession, and you turned it into a 50-50 ball that was bombed 70 yards forward that, you know, half the time got turned over. Tavares didn't have a very good game. He kind of looked out of sorts, although he did some nice work off the ball to make runs pulling guys away. Prizzo had another stinker of a game, just really bad. And it was actually in the calculus for me of thinking about Robin Fraser getting fired. I was like, okay, so we're not thrilled. Some of us are not thrilled that Robin got fired. Some of us think, like, maybe he wasn't the problem. Maybe the problem starts with the front office. But you can't deny the fact that everybody with a brain has been saying for 3 games or 4 games or 5 games or 7 games in a row, Ralph Prizzo doesn't seem to be a very good solution to what ails the Rapids. And Robin Fraser started him again anyways, right? Like, I'm not exactly sure what he saw in him that warranted a start. If only because maybe there just isn't anybody in central midfield who's particularly compelling, right? So yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad. You know, I think there was a moment where that I gift in my back pass where Ronan passes the ball to, I think he's going to Cole Bassett, and Ralph Prizzo, like, steals the ball from him, like, runs in front of him and takes the ball. And then the obvious move for Prizzo is to use the screen that's been set for him and run forward. Prizzo turns backwards, then does a pirouette, and then starts going back the other way, and he's got no options now. He went from having, like, 4 good options with the ball and facing forward to facing backward and having no good options. And it was, like, it was both a classic Prizzo move, but it was, like, also classic Rapids 2023, which was like, we took something promising and turned it into nothing. And it was just a micro moment in a 90-minute game, but it really summarized everything for me. Matt, any thoughts?
There's no point in breaking down the little stuff. We know what happens when the Rapids go at RSL, having already lost a home game in the Rocky Mountain Cup. RSL saw the result. Their star players played like star players, and the Rapids just, again, looked disjointed. I should point out, listeners, I had what for me was a Freudian slip that you could have perceived as a mistake, what I said, and a credit to a listener who pointed it out. I said last week, Mark, that the third leg against RSL, decision day on October 21st, October 22nd, did not count towards the Rocky Mountain Cup. What in my brain I meant to say and thought I said out loud was that if RSL wins this weekend, which they did, is that effectively that game is irrelevant for the Rocky Mountain Cup. The first thing that matters for Rocky Mountain Cup folks isn't aggregate goals scored over the games that count towards it. It's aggregate points gained. So at this point, RSL has two wins. They are up 6-0 from a point standpoint. And the best that the Rapids can do in that regard is make it a 6-3 loss. And then I suppose if it's a draw, then in theory it could be 7-1. And there's a non-zero possibility, listeners, this ends up being a clean sweep for RSL and they win 9-0. But there's nothing, it's not goal scored, it's not goal difference, regardless of the results. The Rapids could win on decision day 31-0, and RSL are still Rocky Mountain Cup champions. So I made a mistake on that. This is now longer irrelevant because RSL has already won said Rocky Mountain Cup. The dumpster fire TIFO, I think, was extremely apt, Mark. I think it was a dig and a shot at the state of the Colorado Rapids, and the fact that you saw so many Rapids fans either agreeing with it or not pushing back on it shows how based in that was representative of where a lot of people, including externally and internally, and people who hate the Rapids, people who love the Rapids, clearly agree that that's where the state of the club is. And then I wrote a separate article for Burgundy Wave for listeners who want to check it out, where Cole Bassett, Mark, who for me is extremely good and thoughtful and intentional about what he does in media, I think said a lot of the quiet part out loud that we've been wanting to see, and I think showed a level of emotional and connection with where the team was at, the significance of Saturday night in the macro, in the micro, in terms of RSL, that we've seen lacking from a lot of people. We've seen Keegan Rosenberry apologized, I think, during one of the RSL at home losses back in April, May, where there was the MLS game on the Saturday and then Open Cup, Rocky Mountain Cup on the midweek. We've seen Jack Price apologize. Diego Rubio has done it as well. I should point out, Mark, I believe that response from Cole was off of a question from Brendan Plone of the Denver Post, who asked Cole, like, do you have a message for the fans? And Cole went on to say, you know, I'm genuinely sorry. You know, I hate losing to these guys especially. And then, like, he was coming at it from he was a fan first, Mark, which I think was really sure. A good moment for Cole. And Robin was asked that same question, and Robin responded by saying just that we'll keep working and we're doing everything that we can. Like, there was no, I apologize. There was no, this is unacceptable. And so I think and we've seen that before from Robin, where he's not been poked, but it's like I'm giving you a platform to, like, tell the fans that you appreciate them, acknowledge that you deserve better, and take some responsibility. And we didn't necessarily see that from him. I don't think that was the reason that Robin got fired. I think as soon as the full-time whistle went, I think Robin probably knew, and I think there were a lot of people at the club who were expecting it. The only thing that was really surprising for me, Mark, is that I think it would have been really easy for the club to hide it by posting it on a national holiday rather than first thing in the morning with everybody back on their devices and not in the mountains or watching the footballs. So that was the only thing about it that really surprised me. But it was nice to see Cole take some accountability and acknowledge the pain of the fans in that regard. That's not something that Robin was particularly good at. I'm really curious to see tomorrow at time of recording, and we will have the audio from the press conference with Porik Smikfolk here on the HTHL feed for you to listen to. For that, that's something that we did not see and we have not seen, Mark, from Porik in the past that I want to believe that we'll see. But that's it. Rocky Mountain Cup's over. The Rapids probably aren't making the playoffs, and again, there's a bunch of metrics by which to define that this is worst run of form that the Rapids are in. One win in 18 all comps, Mark. One win in 15 in league play. It's really bad, and Chris Little and company have, what, like 10 days, 12 days in order to get it right for New England. And if they end up losing, Mark, we're going to get a really good idea, Rabbi. We're going to get there's going to be a good barometer of whether or not this truly is a bottom group of players as available. I want to clarify that. So incorporating Diego Rubio's injury, other injuries they've had, Jack Price being out. We're going to see that in the next two games that they have, which are both home games. And if they go on a run, Mark, then maybe I owe a mea culpa to some of the players, and maybe we owe some backwards, some retroactive criticism to Robin Fraser, that maybe he was more of the problem and deserves more blame pie than we say that he has. Anything else specifically on RSL that we want to say, Mark, or shall we move on to the actual macro implications of Fraser's dismissal?
Let's move to the big story.
Yeah, Rabbi, so I guess do we want to start with, there's two public statements, Mark, that we got. Firstly, from the press release from Porrick Smith that I want to read out. And then do we want to read out the now circulated email that was sent out to season ticket members as well and then talk about that?
For sure. Go for it, buddy.
Okay, so I won't read the whole press release, folks. It mentions the record and everything. We know what's good about Robin Fraser, but so the quote that we have from Porrick from that is, we're incredibly grateful to Robin for his commitment to the club and for what he achieved in his time as head coach. This was a difficult decision and one we felt was necessary to best position the club to return to the playoffs and ultimately compete for trophies. We thank Robin for his 4 years of dedicated work and we wish him nothing but the best in the future. I should say, Mark, I don't have any concerns about Robin landing on his feet. I intend to ask tomorrow when we speak to Porrick whether or not the duration of Robin's contract, which was through 2025, was guaranteed. He's going to be okay financially, Mark. I would be shocked at this point, Rabbi, if one of John Herdman or Greg Vanney has not reached out to him about joining that coaching staff at either Toronto or the LA Galaxy, respectfully, as an assistant by now. Robin will land on his feet in 2024. It will probably be as an assistant. Mark, I'm just concerned with the way his two head coaching opportunities have ended, if it's going to be a while before he gets his next head coaching job. And as Jonathan Tannenwald tweeted, I think really aptly, and hearing it from him who's out of market and relevant and has a platform to say that a lot of it wasn't his fault, I wonder, is the next opportunity he gets going to be one where he has an opportunity in ways that you and I felt that he was under-supported and not put in a position to succeed this season? So, in any case, this email that is addressed to the Rapids family but was sent out to Rapids season ticket holders was first made aware by me by Jason Maxwell. It's been circulated out a bunch as well. Mark, there's been some red lines and some commentary on it that people have been commenting on and looking at as well, but I'm not going to provide any commentary, not going to provide any context. This is the entire email that Porrick addressed to season ticket members from start to finish. Dear Rapids family, as you receive this email, the club has just announced the difficult decision to part ways with our head coach, Robin Fraser. It wasn't a decision we took lightly or without considerable thought, so I wanted to take the moment to offer some insight as to why such a significant change is necessary and is being made at this time. First, though, I want to recognize Robin's dedication to our club and his achievement as our head coach. There were several highs during his time with us, most notably the club record season we had in 2021, back-to-back playoff appearances, and the incredible comeback in 2020 to win the Rocky Mountain Cup. I'll always be grateful to him for those memories and for his commitment to this badge. Unfortunately, we have also experienced some untenable lows that have culminated in our current reality, a team that is last in the league, has scored the fewest goals, has lost another Rocky Mountain Cup, and is on the verge of missing out on the playoffs once more. That's simply unacceptable. It's unacceptable for the type of club we want to be, and most crucially, it's unacceptable because this is a team that is capable of much, much more than that. We've seen what potential this team can be when we play out to our strengths and follow our principles that saw us top of the Western Conference not too long ago. Finishing with a club record point total in 2021 wasn't by luck. It was the result of a systematic approach that built on progress made over years, made year over year from 2018 through 2021. We've since deviated from that path, however, and that's ultimately what this change is about, getting back on track, back to being a team that plays to its strengths, back to being a team that emphasizes player development, back to being a team that approaches each game with urgency, intensity, and boldness, with a resonant spirit and a burning desire to win. And of course, back to being a team that gets results and makes our supporters proud. You deserve as much. I share your frustration and disappointment for how this season has gone and promise we will bounce back. We've done so before and we will do it again. I couldn't be more grateful for the support you've shown to the club throughout this difficult stretch and vow to do everything I can to get back on the path towards success we all yearn. Sincerely, Porrick Smith, Colorado Rapids president. Mark, would you like to provide some commentary, responses, anything that sticks out?
I don't know that anything sticks out. I mean, there's Porik has a way with words.
Yes. As we will probably find out tomorrow at 11:30.
He has a way with words in a way that makes you feel like he's accepting responsibility and not accepting responsibility at the same time. Like he's as media polished and PR slick as it gets. That's a damning by faint praise, or that's kind of like a compliment that also serves as an insult. Because he's really good at it, but it also just feels kind of soulless and like a dodge. And I think for a lot of Rapids fans, they want people to fall on their swords. They want people to take accountability. They want Porik Smith specifically to take accountability for picking the wrong players that put Robin in the position that he was in, I think. You know, like that's a thing. But I think Porik doesn't want to do that for at least two reasons. One, I don't think he believes that the players he picked are deficient. And two, he doesn't want to lose his job. And there's no way to say, you know, me and Robin are equally responsible for this mess of a team that we've concocted without immediately saying, and as such, I am resigning as the president and former general manager of the Colorado Rapids because half of this is my fault and I am going to go try and figure out how to be a better general manager at the USL level where, you know, I can hone my craft and prove myself and return. You know, like that's why this statement doesn't quite do it. There was a line in there that maybe you noticed that a couple people online also noticed about, like, kind of deviating from
the path is the language.
Yeah, deviating from the path is and the implication that a lot of people were picking up is he didn't Rapids way enough, and that was his original sin that caused him to be cast out from the Garden of Eden. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, like, you and I have both talked about the last couple podcasts about whether the Rapids way doesn't work and whether that needs to be rethunk from its beginning. And the answer essentially is, you know, not according to this press release. According to this press release, Robin Fraser just wasn't capable of Rapids weighing hard enough. So we need to find a more Rapidsy, Waysy kind of person to do this job going forward. Matt, what did you pick up from it that was of note?
Yeah, so my question is, like, deviating from the path, you know, he mentions here, where is it towards the end of it, Mark, saying that the team needs to approach it with urgency, intensity, and boldness, and a resolute spirit and a burning desire to win. So that's kind of my question. When he says deviating from the path, was that Robin was not executing on the vision of the Rapids way? Was he doing it in a wrong way? Or was this simply coming down to the keep fighting component of the team as well, Mark? You know, fundamentally, the Rapids way is an acknowledgement that there's good stuff in the history and how the clubs build and what they do to try to access, but it needs to pivot, not throw the baby out with the bathwater. So my question is then, are they seeing which is the baby and which is the bathwater in this case? And Porik's now multiple times, Mark, on the record, not asked about that game specifically, has commented on the first half performance at St. Louis City, where just the Rapids were not in it. And even after getting punched in the mouth twice, like, did not react quickly enough. There wasn't a intensity. You know, we can fault players for not being good enough technically in some regard. We can fault them for being in difficult situations, but like, the you can't not try. As we mentioned, as I've said this a number of times, I don't know if I've said it on HDHL, like you know, fundamentally, the two of the core tenets, Mark, of this club's success in 2021 were maximum effort and the power of friendship. And so this is a club with how they spend and how the lack of depth they had and the injuries they've had this season, there's so much less margin for error. Anything less than maximum effort, basically from like mid-May, where they had that, where they started to have that, where the bad stretch went down, where they had that period where they were unbeaten and it was a bunch of draws. And it was like, okay, they were playing bad teams. We played good teams. There was the game against Columbus. That was a loss. I think there was another good team in there. The Rapids ended up losing too. There was the San Jose game. They probably should have won at home. And so it was, okay, they're just not as good. This team needs to maximum effort to have any opportunity to make the playoffs in that regard. And I agree with Porik that I think something in what Robin was doing, even if it was just as simple, and again, if you listen to the audio from Cole on Saturday Night Listeners, or if you see my, or if you read my article, there's a point where Cole acknowledges the quiet part out loud and then dances around it without saying it, Mark. I increasingly am starting to wonder, was Robin a broken record with the team? Did he lose the locker room, or was the message not being heard? And the simple fact that Chris Littrell will be a different voice as the biggest and the most prominent voice in the locker room, even if he's saying the same things or saying it in similar ways, is just going to be a breath of fresh air that the club needed at this time. And so that's something I want to wonder. That's something I wonder about internally, and we'll get data points on that on September 16th, and then I think 3 or 4 days later, whenever the Seattle game is. But the other big thing for me, Mark, that he pointed out, that that Porik pointed out also, was the you know, it's unacceptable because this team is capable of much, much more than that. That, to me, is the, this is not a bottom group of players.
That's right. This is not my fault. This is somebody else's fault.
But so I've heard this now from a number of people, former players, coaches at the time, and then Porik, when Hudson was dismissed, Mark, they had a meeting. This was pre, I can't remember if this was with Connor Casey coming over as interim report spoke, and he said specifically, I do not believe that this is an O, I think their record was 0-11-2, 11 losses, 2 draws, no wins in the first 13 games of the season. He said, I do not believe that this roster is, that record is reflecting of that. And Porik is clearly saying he does not believe this team, from a talent, from a makeup standpoint, from what they're capable of, that right now they are wooden spoon contenders. And we can have a discussion about that. And I'm sure if we ask and Porik's in front of a camera and know that he's being recorded, the first thing he's going to say, Mark, is, well, you know, Jack Price went down for the year. Diego Rubio's had a bunch of injuries. Not many teams would respond well to their most important midfielder, their most important attacking player going down. And that has to be, and that can't be understated. But so, like, he's clearly, and so while there's, well, I think there's a lot of good stuff in here, Mark, in you deserve so much more. The results have been on, you know, there's unacceptable twice in back-to-back sentences in the statement. To your point, at no point is there accountability. At no point is there, I bear responsibility for this. There's, this is unacceptable. You deserve more. We're going to work to do better. But again, Mark, the responses that I saw in the comments on Burgundy Wave, in the comments when I tweeted it out, there were so many fans of just hearing, I'm going to look the actual quote up here, Mark. We're going to look up what Cole actually said. Here we go. Cole's message to the, Cole Bassett's message to the fan base, quote, I'm genuinely sorry. It means as much to me as it does to you guys. I hate losing to these guys, referring to RSL. I think there's a lot of fans, Mark, that want to hear, I, Porik Smith, apologize for the state of the team. I bear some responsibility in this. I think there's so many fans that just, the fact that he hasn't said it, Mark, to your point, I think bears the question, does he think that, or is he not saying that from a job security standpoint? I was thinking about the last press conference, Mark. I was texting back and forth with a season ticket holder who didn't care for Porik's tone. And, you know, you mentioned it a couple minutes ago. We've mentioned it, of Porik's approach to public statements when he knows that he's quotable and everything, and his certain demeanor in that regard. And I think there's a lot of fans who have certainly soured to that, not only the way that he approaches what he says, but what he says and what he does not say. And I think there's a lot of fans that increasingly wonder, like, is he speaking to an audience of one? There was a interview pre-COVID in the Trump administration, Mark, where Stephen Miller went on a bunch of the CNN Sunday talk shows, and he speaks to Jake Tapper, and they get into it, they kind of get into some verbal fisticuffs, and there's a point where Jake Tapper shuts down whatever Stephen Miller's saying, and he says, Stephen, I don't think that you're here genuinely to talk to the American people. I think that you're here for an audience of one, the president, and I think you're being obsequious. I'm not going to go that far yet, Mark, but I could understand why there's a lot of fans that feel that, and Porik's refusal to do that either means he doesn't believe it, which a lot of fans see as cognitive dissonance or a lack of accountability on his end, even though he seemingly is capable of holding everyone below him in the org chart accountable. and then the questions about whether or not the people above him at KSE are holding him accountable, given the club hasn't given ownership hasn't itself dismissed a executive or head coach directly in the last 15 years. I'm going to ask tomorrow listeners how much ownership was involved, or is this just like the Hudson and the Mastroianni firing, where it was a decision made by Smith with the support of ownership? That's the language that I've been told a number of times for those two dismissals. And so does Pork genuinely not believe that he's accountable, Mark? Does he think the fans are owed an apology, or is he not doing it because of the dynamics? And in that regard, are we not getting someone who public-facing is genuine from an accountability standpoint and is protecting themselves at the expense of the emotions and then ultimately the club being able to move forward? I think all of those are interesting questions based on this statement. We'll see what Pork has in store for us with the presser tomorrow. Mark, what is Robin firing Fraser? No, Mark, I could never fire you. Aww. What is Robin Fraser's legacy? 10 years from now, when we talk about Robin Fraser, what will we remember? What will we think about?
Wow, that's an interesting question. You know, he comes in after Anthony Hudson and after Pablo Mastroianni. And so I think their reputations were – Pablo Mastroianni had an identity as a head coach, which was similar to his days as a player. Defensive midfielder, tough-minded, impossible to play through, physical, smash-mouth soccer. And, you know, that ultimately was his undoing because – I think the front office and the fans to some degree got tired of grinding out 1-0 wins and wanted something a little bit more contemporary and exciting. So then we bring in Anthony Hudson, who brought us contemporary and exciting, but couldn't win. You know, like the team got pulled apart and game after game while scoring a little bit more than they did under the Mastroianni days, but it didn't really matter because, you know, losing 4-1 isn't better than drawing 1-1. I mean, technically, it's worse. So they moved away from that, and I think Fraser got closer to the vision than any other coach, in the sense that, you know, one of the things I noted in this last game, and I think this is something you can go back through Rapid's history under Fraser and note, which is they never got obliterated defensively. Like, they never looked... They had some games where they looked second best, you know, when they got hammered 4-0 versus LAFC. That wasn't great. But, like, I never felt like a Robin Fraser team was set up poorly defensively, or that they were attacking in a way that made the defense weakened or second best. I felt like, you know, Fraser's overall watchword was balance, that everything was kind of like there was a lot of, you know, attention to ball movement, shifting the opposing defense around without pulling your own players well out of position and being, you know, easily exposed on the counter, which was a hallmark of the Hudson era, that Hudson would come up with a really exciting attacking, you know, thing that if it were wound up in a turnover would result in. So that I think is Fraser's legacy, that he was kind of flexible, bend but don't break, but ultimately that became stale and boring and it didn't really accomplish a whole lot. It showed flashes at times under the right people at the right times of being functional but not sexy, but it was ultimately not the right direction to go in that bore fruit for the team. I don't know. Did I get somewhere near what you were thinking, or are there other things that you think are more notable for a legacy from Robin Fraser to remark upon?
Maybe for me, Mark, this is the fact that I'm boots on the ground media, and a lot of what I'll remember about Robin is my, you know, individual in-person interactions that obviously a lot of fans, you know, fans see him, you know, in videos that the club put out. They see him occasionally in the locker room with like the Elevate series, and then they see him on game day and how he acts on the, you know, on the sideline and everything. I just remember, I think Robin's still an incredible professional. I think he's an incredibly good person. I was not one of the media members who asked him a lot about what was going on with his daughters and what they did from a soccer standpoint there. But from everything that I can tell, you know, he's a very competent and caring, you know, loving girl dad, father. And so I'll just remember that he was the steady hand that the Rapids needed, who wanted to be here, who cared about being here, like who saw this as an opportunity. And he matched the tactical acumen and the X's and O's that I think the front office saw in Hudson and thought Hudson could figure out with the emotional history and connection to the club that Pablo Mastroianni clearly had. And in that regard, I think he was a perfect fit on a number of fronts at the right time to come to the Rapids. Just the calm demeanor that he had, being, you know, let's call it, Mark, you know, a stoic black man who, you know, has had to work for a lot of his opportunities and had, you know, and has been questioned in terms of his credentials every single time that he's went up. I can't remember if this was with Taylor Twellman or if this was Grant Wall before he passed, but there was a point where Robin alluded to in his time at Toronto where he was getting interviews about whether or not those interviews were genuine in terms of those opportunities, or if he was being interviewed as a second or third backup candidate.
The Rooney Rule candidate.
But, well, this would have been that rule was implemented with Wilfred Nancy coming to Montreal and then – or getting elevated at Montreal and then Colorado signing Robin Fraser. And I should point out, Mark, we are down to one black head coach in Major League Soccer. It is just Wilfred Nancy, who's in his first year at Columbus Crew. We started with three, Robin Fraser gone, and then Ezra Henderson gone, what I think, you know, less than a year and a half into his tenure with the Chicago Fire. As well, and opportunities for coaches and what that looks like from an ethnic diversity standpoint and a background diversity that comes with that, I think is increasingly still a valid question in Major League Soccer. And how does MLS implement that, given one of the people who was the literal poster boy for the class action lawsuit that would have led to that rule was Robin Fraser being potentially more qualified than his head coaches at RSL and New York Red Bulls, and then being just like, if you're talking about who was more responsible for the vision of Toronto FC, Mark, in terms of like the him and Greg Vanney, it's at best in favor of Vanney, it's 60-40. And I've spoken to a number of people in Toronto who would argue it was like 55-45. And if you've got an assistant coach who's like that and everything, like that's closer to Bruce Arena, Dave Sarakin than it is, you know, I guess whoever's Tata Martino's assistant at this point at Inter Miami, basically saying like, hey, pass the ball to Messi and then get open so Messi can pass it to you. And so I think he was the right guy for the job. We'll always have 2021 and those joys and everything. I think Robin genuinely cared about the club. He didn't see it as a stepping stone. He saw this as an opportunity that he really had, and he was emotionally committed to the project in mind, body, and soul in ways that Pablo was not tactically, in ways that we saw, if you're believing the rumors around Newcastle, you know, I think Hudson was looking for an opportunity, and clearly, as he's shown, will go to the opportunity that presents him, that presents itself to him. This is the best opportunity, regardless of geography or level in terms of quality. And then just his humanity and the way that he showed it, Mark. You know, he was a very reserved individual. He was a certain way with the media, as, you know, I mentioned on Twitter earlier today. Mark and Brendan and I eventually earned his respect. And say what you will about how other members of the club, about how Porrick Smith handles media, about how other players have handled media and everything, it took a little bit of time for Robin to, I think, get used to us. 2020 did him a disservice because there was less in-person interaction with the way that the club did the Zoom press conferences. There wasn't video both ways, so he could hear us, but it doesn't lend itself well to a conversation and a back and forth. Robin fundamentally respected me and respected so many other people in the space, and he got that, and he tried to work within that even when there were difficult moments. And I'll just remember like these little moments of humanity that you've seen as well, Mark, when one of the young players would have a particularly bad game. Or I remember this with Danny Wilson, seeing it a few times at training. I've never talked about this at all with anybody, by the way, when things weren't going great, when he was in and out of the lineup, Mark, going into 2021, and just like coming to him, talking to him, and like not putting his arm around the shoulder, because I think Danny's technically taller, but just that little interpersonal action that he had, combined with the vision for what someone could be tactically, and in the right situation when things were going well, could bring out the best in him. And so there was one little moment that I saw, Mark, that was just an incredible, it was a little thing that like would have been like a nonverbal thing that you see for a split second on Ted Lasso that the edit and the cut specifically includes to like show so much into a character's development and everything. And it was after Robin's first home game with the club. They had obviously his first game was Labor Day weekend at New York Red Bulls, the start of the altitude kerfuffle, and Jonathan Lewis scores a brace to win at Red Bull Arena, and then they come back for Frazier's first home game at DSG, and the Rapids win 2-0 against Seattle Sounders. And then Robin comes in for the press conference. I had already met him, but, you know, he's like the, he's getting used to the room and the space and everything. And then he's getting ready to come out. I'm right by the door. And then we kind of make eye contact. And then he, you know, goes into his own headspace, because I do think Robin's a very introverted person. And he says, "This was a good one, but there will be bad ones. That is certain." Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like, he smirks to himself, and then he nods in like accepting of like, "This is my lot at the head coach, and my job is how I go about dealing with that, not the reality of that." And so for someone who was so reserved, who comported himself in a certain way with a lot of people, where a lot of his personality that I think people around the club saw, we weren't privy to being outside the club, not being players, not being the other staff and everything. He just had these other little moments that I think just showed his incredible level of humanity, to where just I respect him as much as a person as I do a head coach. I feel very comfortable saying right now, Mark, based on what he achieved, his circumstances and everything, he is the second best head coach in Colorado Rapids history. And had the Rapids won MLS Cup in 2021, I would feel very comfortable saying right now he is better than his tenure. And what, even if 2022 unchanged, 2023 unchanged, I would feel comfortable saying right now, had they won MLS Cup, he is better. He's the best head coach in club history. The only thing that is separating him from Gary Smith is that trophy, as it should be. And that should be the standard now in that regard. Mark, where the heck do we go from here? Obviously, I've said it a few times now, a difficult stretch to go on. There's 8 games left. This team would have to go on. I haven't even done the math because I didn't think it was relevant, Mark. What would or should a new coach bump look like? Should we care at all about what Chris Little is doing? Or is this closer to like a Steve Cook situation where we've just got 8 games to go before the offseason can start, and it's just a matter of can they out-result Toronto to not win the spoon?
I don't know how to care about the rest of the season. I mean, I think you evaluate it on 8 games. I think it's fun for you. I mean, honestly, in terms of being media, my favorite stretch of interviewing any coach was the Steve Cook era. Cook had an openness and a relaxedness. He wanted results. He wanted to try things. He didn't really have what he needed. I mean, I think Steve Cook played like Lewis Gill more than any coach ever needed to play any other player in history. But it was just like, what else are we going to do? What's the point? I'd like to see the young players get a chance, but I don't really think we're going to see a lot of that, mostly because I feel like the team doesn't necessarily believe that throwing Rapids 2 players into the mix against Major League Soccer teams is going to be healthy for them. I think they're going to feel like they're outmatched and it's going to hurt their confidence. I mean, Yaya Toure was starting for Rapids 2 against North Texas, which that was a decision that had to be made. This was not a game where the Rapids and Rapids 2 traveled to RSL together. The two teams split the difference. That was a notable thing. I don't know if you picked this up, Matt. I tweeted it really quickly, but Sebastian Anderson was on the bench on Saturday, and then for the Rapids, and he was an unused sub, and then he started in North Texas, which meant, I suppose, at the end of the game on Saturday night, the coaching staff turned to him and said, "You know, we've got a plane ticket for you to go to Texas tomorrow morning. You're on the 11 o'clock. Hydrate." You know, like, that's kind of crazy to me, but I assume that they had probably briefed him at the beginning of the weekend, which was, don't bring one out for it fit for the weekend, bring 3, you know? Reminds me, quick story that has nothing to do with this whatsoever. I interviewed for 3 jobs the year I was ordained from rabbinical school and didn't get any of them. And so the next couple weeks I had to interview, flew to, no joke, Jackson, Mississippi to interview for a job, which I can tell you all about on another podcast at another time. On my other podcasts, Rabbis Go for Job Interviews. And I flew out to Jackson, and I flew home, and I called my dad on my way back, and I said, I was living in LA, and I said, hey, you know, my flight from LA to San Francisco for my next job interview is right after my flight from Jackson. Can you meet me at the airport with a change of clothes? And so I met my dad at the airport. I came out of the terminal. I handed him a suit bag. He gave me a different suit bag, gave me a hug, said good luck. And I walked right back in and got on a plane to San Francisco. And that feels like how Sebastian Anderson had to do it. Anyways, what are my expectations for the rest of the season? Not much. You know, maybe a little bit of fun here. Trying some new things, letting some different players get some run. But I, you know, if we lose all 8 games and we do it in spectacular fashion, or if we grind out literally 1 or 2 draws or 1 win the rest of the season, I'll consider it a success. I don't think Chris Little is any, is in any position to be the head coach next year.
No.
So it doesn't, it's really absolutely just the lamest of lame duck eras in the history of the Colorado Rapids.
Yeah, I was asked about this, Mark. I have someone who's not an immediate family member, but relatively close to Woldy Harris from a previous coaching stint that he had, that asked me about like what I thought about his job security. And Mark, I feel pretty confident, unless it's somebody else with a close connection to the club. I don't think Marcelo Balboa would be interviewed for it, Mark, but I could see Balboa coming in and then taking stock of the existing assisting staff and then deciding and then giving that opportunity for them to come in. I could see, I think the only assistant who survives next year under a new head coach is Chris Sharpie. And with the concerns that we increasingly have about the goalkeeper position and Marco Ilicha, Mark, and the fact that, you know, Sharpie is also responsible for set pieces, and we've seen a clear regression now in that, I think it's a valid question. I think that new head coach who comes in should have the opportunity to speak to every single assistant and then make their own decision, regardless of what it means financially for the club, without any pressure from the front office, whether or not to keep or depart from anybody. There's a very real possibility that we've got a bunch of lame duck assistant coaches at this point, who at this point, Mark, are making calls and then trying to set up for interviews for where they're going to be next year. And going back to my last kind of thought about the origin of where maybe the crux is of where Robin was most at fault of the, do they keep trying to do what they're doing, Mark? Are we going to see a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3-ish, depending on the setup? Or at what point does Chris Little say, like, hey, let's get some confidence? Like, does Chris Little do what we've been saying Robin hasn't done that ultimately maybe contributed? Like, let's just go flat 4-4-2. Do we see a reset in terms of Chris Little saying, hey, you know, we've got training this week, guys, and then, you know, you're coming back on Monday, and whoever plays the best in training and all of our drills between Monday and Thursday, you're the ones who's getting start on Saturday. So then it's a free-for-all in terms of competition in that regard. Do we see that? I don't know. Chris Little was with the Tacoma Defiance, Mark, I think technically when they were in the USL before they were the MLS Next Pro affiliate for the Sounders. I didn't watch the Defiance enough to know what they were like tactically, how similar are they to what the Rapids were trying to be with the Rapids way, or how close they were to the Seattle Sounders. But do we see a slightly different spin? Possibly. Does it make a difference? I'm not sure. But I go back to Mark. We've got 8 data points that we're going to see between now and the end of the season about whether or not this is a bottom group of players and how much Robin and his approach or how he was saying it was ultimately at fault. And at some point, Mark, whenever this team is officially eliminated from the playoffs, I'd like to see the kids get a run out. You know, there's been so much clamoring about how bad the center backs were, how bad Ralph Priso's been, how bad some of the attackers are. Give Sebastian Anderson 90 minutes at home against Austin FC if the Rapids are eliminated from the playoffs at that standpoint. Let's see, is he as bad as Alex Gershbach was at Seattle the season opener as well? Like, let's get some data point on that. We've been saying and we've been thinking the fact that Mike Edwards, Abubakar Keita can't get minutes, the fact that Bombito's gotten minutes over them shows how much better he is than all of those. Like, the give the fans a visual representation. Are these guys actually that bad at the bottom? And so let's play the kids and let's see if Mike Edwards can do anything. Was this secretly Robin trying to get results to say his job? save his job, was this Robin not rating them in the moment or not liking something different, or are they actually bad? Is all the depth and all the youth that we've been talking about and all the players who've gained so much experience and are clearly showing they can do it as MLS Next Pro level, are they secretly, is their threshold bad at the MLS level? Like, let's see Mike Edwards go out in a game where he's going to be desperate to prove himself and absolutely boss the game. Or is he going to go out and he's going to be terrible and we're like, wow, if that was Lawless Abubakar, we'd be like, that's bad even by Lawless's standards. That's proof then that he's part of the problem and that the roster build is not as good, or the depth isn't as good as we... It's not good in that we don't think it's good, but we haven't physically seen that. And how much of Robin's own failings and his looking at players through his own biases was maybe contributing to that. We should get an understanding of what that looks like, especially once the team officially has nothing to play for. Mark, anything else that we want to say about Robin Fraser at this point?
No, I wish him well. I do think he'll have more success with another team. I don't think this is the end of his ride, which we agree on, I think, from before. So, Pablo Mastroeni found success after the Rapids, and I think...
Anthony Hudson found success after the Rapids.
Well, he found a job. We'll see if it's success. So we'll see. He found two jobs. He was an assistant with the USMNT. It's true. So I think Robin will go on to bigger and better things. I mean, Gary Smith found great success after the Rapids. He's doing great with Nashville. So that's also almost kind of a depressing sub-fact here, which is people go on and do just fine after after coaching for the Rapids.
After they get scapegoated by the Rapids. Yeah. And okay.
Which is a shame. So we wish you well, Robin. I interacted with him very briefly because I already moved out of Colorado. I think I maybe have done one press conference that he was present at, if that. So, which is unfortunate for me in the sense that, like, he's kind of the first Colorado Rapids manager that I spent a lot of time with and never actually met. Maybe down the road I'll get to shake the man's hand.
Listeners, we've got a bunch of really good Ask HTHLs, but first, Mark, especially given the state, tell our listeners how they can best support independent and constructive coverage of the Colorado Rapids.
Folks, you can help support this independent soccer journalism by becoming a paid subscriber, which we call a Highliner, to our podcast and to our Substack. So Holding the Highline is a reader-supported publication as well as a podcast. We do this out of love, but website hosting and buying gas to go to training ain't free. If you value what we do, consider being a paid subscriber at just $42 a year or $5 a month. It will give you some merch. We still have four pint glasses left to go. If you become a subscriber/highlighter, you will get one of our final four pint glasses. I shipped out two today, Matt, which is a pretty good deal. We really appreciate it. We're happy to cover the Colorado Rapids in good times or in bad. And that is something that, like I said before, we're the cockroaches of the soccer podcast world. You just can't squish us. We're not going anywhere. No one can stop us. They can't even hope to contain us. And by sending us $42 a year or $5 a month, you'd be supporting citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Back to you, Matt, for our reader questions from AskHTHL hashtag on Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, currently known as X.
Mark, you made a tentative list last episode that you were looking at for coaches, but there's been some discourse about the people who are available, people that the Rapids could go after, and then who plausibly, between the Venn diagram of what can the Rapids afford, who wants this job, who could succeed in this job, what that looks like. So Jason Maxwell asking, obvious question, any coaching candidates you like that would actually take this job? Mark, you made that list last podcast, sleeping on it, knowing now that the Rapids are immediately entering a coaching search. Any names at the top of that list?
I made a longer list. I don't love my list. I don't think it's the world's greatest list, but it's a list. I do think that there are some European candidates who I didn't really think about who are up there. I added a couple names to the list who are good coaches who deserve a shot. unlikely people to come to the Colorado Rapids, and other folks who I just threw in there. There's a name on here I really like that's kind of out of left field, but I feel good about it. Like, I feel like this guy might be a good one. So here's my new updated list 2.0. Okay. Everybody on this list is available or an assistant with a current MLS team. Okay. Aiko Parra, Ator Karanka, Jason Kreiss, Mike Petke, Neil Collins, Caleb Porter, Giovanni Savarese, Jesse Marsh, Vitor Pereira, Tuca Ferretti, Andy Rose, Freddy Juarez, Mehdi Bellucci, Landon Donovan, Rob Valentino, and Bob Lilly. That is my list. Now, I just want to go through a couple of the highlights there.
Bob Lilly's available, Mark? He's not coaching the Riverhounds?
He is, but, you know, everybody has a price, buddy, especially at the end of the USL season. Okay, so Aiko Parra retired too soon, was greatly regarded as a really wonderful center back. We've heard him on podcasts before. He was on the Sal and Benny show back when that was around. He was actually, I think, sometimes like a co-host with the show. Ike is a really good, smart, thoughtful guy with a huge MLS pedigree whose career ended too soon. And he's been an assistant for the last couple years. So he feels like he's got some possibility. I mentioned last time, Ator Karanka is a coach who's coached in the Israeli League and La Liga in Spain and is a former Colorado Rapids player. So he seems like he's got some pedigree. He's also, as far as I know, available. Jason Kreiss and Mike Petke are way out of left field. I don't think either of them is very likely, but you never know. Neil Collins is their current coach for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. He really stepped in and overachieved with that club year after year. Eye for talent, tactical guy, also very young. I think he's, honestly, Matt, Neil Collins is my favorite pick. But I don't think USL coaches or players rate at the MLS level the way they should. Caleb Porter's available. Giovanni Savarese's available. Both of them former coaches for Portland Timbers. That's what binds them together. Jesse Marsh is available, having recently been let go from Leeds. I don't know what's up with him or what the odds are that he's interested in an MLS job. He's kind of already proved that he can make it work in MLS. This is kind of like working backwards. But then again, Bob Bradley did the same thing when he went from America to Swansea and then came back to America to coach and was very successful for LAFC. Tuca Ferretti is like an almost definitely not going to happen kind of thing. He was playing in coaching in Liga MX as of late, but recently got fired, I think, by Chivas. But he's a wonderful manager and a really colorful player, colorful character, and really enjoyable. Two MLS guys who are currently in the Seattle organization, which means that they have they've been kind of mentored by a really great head coach in Brian Schmetzer, are Andy Rose and Freddy Juarez. I don't know how likely it is either of them are ready to make this big step, but I think it's interesting. Mehdi Bellucci is an assistant coach in the NYCFC system. They're a fantastic organization. Bellucci had a great MLS career. Former Colorado Rapid, also.
Do you remember what he was traded for, Mark?
I believe Mehdi Bellucci was part of the Kyle Beckerman trade.
Yes, he was part of the Kyle Beckerman trade to RSL, and then I can't remember if he was either dealt to Houston for Jamie Smith, or I think he was sent to Red Bull in exchange for Matt Congee. It was one of the two. I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's great. But I don't know. I actually don't know much about Mehdi Bellucci, the guy, but I do think that a former Colorado Rapids player who's been out and around for a while, who is assisting under a really good team, seems like he has a lot of things. Landon Donovan is an available pick. Rob Valentino is an assistant for Atlanta, and I think that he also had a long MLS career and USL career, and so I think he's an interesting pick. And then finally, Bob Lilly, who is the Riverhounds coach. He's never had a losing season. Bob's a really smart tactician. He's a good man motivator. He has a very good eye for talent. He would need a lot of help to kind of get up to speed at the MLS level, and I think he's unlikely to be on anyone's radar anymore. But that's my current list. If there's anybody that I missed, Matt, that's really obvious. There's some high-flying European talent out there who I didn't mention, like Sam Allardyce, Zinedine Zidane. There's a couple other guys out there, but I don't think those.
Hasn't Patrick Vieira not landed somewhere? There's no way Patrick Vieira is coming to Colorado.
Oh, Vieira would be great.
There's three names that I'll point out here, Mark. First of all, part of this is I have a lot of Salvadorian friends throughout my life, Mark, so I'm very clued in from a CONCACAF standpoint on what's the nickname? El Equipo, I can't remember the name of the nickname for El Salvador's national team. But so Hugo Perez is the head coach of them. He's been there since 2021. Obviously, most of his career was pre-MLS, Mark. According to his Wikipedia page, his last year playing professionally was 1996. But and then he was a U.S. national team player for the better part of a decade. Not anybody significant from a 1990 or 1994 World Cup contribution. And he understands CONCACAF, which I think is some value in terms of is he bringing in a different expertise geographically in terms of players that they could go after. And for the most part, Mark, they've tried to play some interesting soccer, some Rapid Thug Life energy for El Salvador, and they've mostly, from a talent standpoint, for me, outkicked their coverage. Certainly from what they did in World Cup qualifying, obviously, I think less so in the most recent Gold Cup as well, but he's somebody who a lot of people have he should start getting more play when an MLS job comes up. I have no idea if he would be interested in the opportunity. He doesn't have any connections what I can see, obviously, to Colorado, but we'll see about that. And then the other two that I might look at, Mark, both of these would be projects. I don't think that, given what Porik and has been said about the desire to turn things around sooner rather than later, these are great assistant options. I don't think that this is the direction they'd go in for the head coach. Jamie Franks at DU, Mark, I think has achieved about everything that he's going to do not being at a powerhouse. And obviously there's appeals to coaching in a situation where you're comfortable, you're happy. He's at an academic institution where what he does in terms of off the field, in terms of recruitment, graduation rate, and character development of those players can save you even when results don't go well. But if he has any ambition, like the fact, Mark, that we haven't seen him being interviewed for Stanford or Maryland or UCLA makes me think that either that's not something he's interested in or that's just not an opportunity that's going to come up. Would he want to be an assistant on the Rapid staff, knowing the local market, having an understanding of the college game as well in ways that would bring more into the brain trust? And the other is Brendan Burke, Mark, who I was always super impressed with what he did at Switchbacks. They tried to play fun soccer. They did a really good job in terms of their international recruitment and finding kind of guys that were interesting. I think they did a better job of developing players to then move on to other opportunities. Nangalina, for example, who was dynamic for them when they made the playoffs and went all the way to the conference finals, lost out to San Antonio, who ended up winning the USL Championship, I believe. If you told me right now that whoever the head coach of the Rapids are, they're bringing those two minds in as assistants, I'd be all here for. Brendan Burke is currently an assistant under Ben Olsen at Houston Dynamo, for what that's worth. Next, Ask HTHL, Mark, we have is from Bray. Question is, Smith on the clock now. Say whoever is the next head coach succeeds next year, whatever success is. Does that mean Smith got good players Frazier couldn't coach? Or if opposite happens, we fail again next year, is Smith out? Bray, it's not obvious to me what the situation is in terms of pressure coming from ownership. And I think given the contracts, Wayne Brandt, Porik Smith are signed through 2026 now. The only people who are getting rid of them at this point is Josh Kroenke or someone one degree of Kevin Bacon removed from him. And as I've mentioned, that hasn't happened at KSC in over 15 years. Paul Bravo left of his own accord, and then all the other coaches were either fired by the technical director or were out of contract in the case of Gary Smith, or left of their own accord card, CC Oscar Pereja going to FC Dallas. So I want to believe that Smith is on the clock. A functioning organization with a functioning ownership group that cares about this would say there's pressure on Pádraig Smith, and if this next hire does not go well in the first 18 months, fully cleaning house on that front, I don't know. To your point, Bray, about the new coach and potentially a new coach bump the rest of this year or them succeeding as well, I think that's the one data point that we don't have. That's the unanswered question that I have. I believe that the 2019 Rapids going 13 games, 2 points in 2019, that was a reflection of Hudson, and they clearly showed that was not a bottom group of players. I don't know right now, as constructed and with some of the outs that we could see this offseason, that we see that bounce around. We'll get data points in the 8 games remaining this season, and if the new coach is able to turn around, I think that will certainly be a knock for Robin Fraser, and I think that will ultimately then, there's some retconning that'll happen, or there's some perspective, we're going to have to wait for that to happen to then have some perspective on Robin's failures ultimately at the end, certainly a lot of these players, and then still the roster build by Pádraig Smith as to, you know, moving around some of those, you know, bites of the blame pie. Mark, and then we have our good friend Scott Hammond, who is asking, do the Rapids win another game this season? Mark, you kind of alluded to it, but let's put a prediction on here. 8 games left. I can pull up the schedule if you want. Rapids, 1 win or no wins? How many wins, rather?
0 wins. We're not winning. We get 2 ties.
The remaining schedule for the Colorado Rapids. Home to New England, home to Seattle, at Portland, hosting Vancouver, one of the rescheduled games, home to Austin, at Dallas, at Houston, home to RSL on decision day. I think there's only really 2 games in there, Mark, that you can plausibly say are wins. Is Portland out of it by the time we get to September 23rd? And do the Rapids get a result on the road? And then I have to believe that both teams will be eliminated or are facing elimination by September 30th when it's Austin FC. I will say that the Colorado Rapids win that home game against Austin FC. Huh. I think they can get a draw at Portland. I do not see more than 1 other draw in the remaining 6 games.
I think a draw at Portland and a draw against Houston, and that's about all we got. Houston, Portland worked a draw this last week against Seattle, which Jeff Reuter commented on the Monday article that The Athletic drops, which is a really good article worth your MLS dollars, basically said, does anybody in the Western Conference want to win? You know, that there's no dominant team, and everybody kind of like flubs their lines when it's time. So I thought that was an interesting point. And Houston are kind of like, also they're like a very kind of up and down team all season. So, we don't play the Galaxy again, do we? That would be a nice one if we had a chance for it, but it's interesting to ask the question whether the Galaxy are going to kind of start to pull things together themselves. They've also had a pretty rough season. So,
yes, a question that I'll throw to you, Mark, comes from Rapids Foreign Legion, hashtag AskHTHL. Pádraig Smith is often talked about regarding the Rapids, but another individual that has a key role with the Rapids is Francis Fran Taylor. Can you explain Fran's role and how that job has any impact on the Rapids' win-loss record? I can't remember if he's technically technical director or sporting director, but that was the move that he had. That was the promotion that he got that was announced earlier this year, Mark. And before that, he was technically assistant general manager to Pádraig Smith, who was vice president and general manager.
5 seasons ago, I wrote an article about Fran for American Soccer Analysis. One of my favorite pieces I ever wrote. What I learned about Fran was that he really understood how to use the advanced metrics. He was one of the first guys, you know, the soccer players today all wear an advanced motion detecting system on their backs. It's like a sports bra kind of thing with like a big bulky chip thing between their shoulder blades. And it marks all of their movement around the pitch, their ability to accelerate and decelerate, their turning and their pivoting. And it also marks and takes note of you know, how their heart rate is doing and how much longer they have to go on the pitch before they start really exhibiting that they're exhausted. Fran Taylor was like the first guy to really understand how to match that with the metrics the team was developing in expected goals, in you know, kind of other key metrics that they were creating. Fran is also a really smart guy in terms of being able to create a number that expresses things like the Rapids way. So you can kind of take a bubbling cauldron of statistics to create your ideal number for every position. So say you want your defensive midfielder to be very effective at tackling and intercepting, but they also need to be able to play line-breaking forward passes, and also need to be great at 40-yard pass diagonals, right? You can actually, like, make a number that will do that at every single position and do different things for every position based on what you think you want that position to do. Fran's the guy who cooks. Fran's the guy who's able to sit down with the math nerds and the other folks and say, this is what we want at this position. These are the traits that we want this person to exhibit. How do we find that person? So he can do that by both evaluating who amongst the Rapids are getting it done and also who in the rest of soccer worldwide might be available and recruitable. So he's like a really essential cog in the machine. He also did some advanced scouting, so he could look at an opposing team and say, this player has this tendency and does this, and here's where you can exploit their weaknesses and so on and so forth. Now, when you move him up a level, you hopefully hire people under him who he can delegate to, who can find those little inefficiencies and efficiencies that the Rapids can exploit. The trick about all of that is math is not math. Math is just a descriptor by other means. Matt's an engineer. He understands this better than I do, right? You got to use the right data and the right numbers, or as they say in the business, garbage in, garbage out, right? Like if you pick the wrong number to exhibit something, it will tell you a story, but it won't tell you the right story. The question about Fran is he telling the right story these days? And another question that you can ask about Fran is Porik asking him to tell the right story? So I think Fran is probably still doing a fair amount of that at the level that he's at. I think he's really kind of always been Porik's right-hand man, which is Porik says, we need a player we can acquire for $1.5 million who is under the age of 26 and who can be a central midfielder. Go find us a list of guys, Fran. And Fran goes about and finds that list of guys. And, you know, really can then evaluate each and every one of them on what specific things that they're looking for. You know, it's always a question about whether Fran is finding that right mix between seeing good players with his eyeballs and seeing good players through math, and whether those guys are the same people. There are true Luddites out there like Bruce Arena who don't believe that numbers will tell the story. You know, we've all seen Moneyball. We all know the scene where the scouts are sitting around going, he's a bad body catcher. Bad body catcher is not going to work in this league, right? And they're like, no, that's Kevin Youkilis. He's going to be really good someday. You know, like, but there's also guys who are blinded by numbers. The character who Jonah Hill is playing in that movie is Paul DePodesta, who was the assistant general manager for the team and for the Oakland A's, and then became the general manager for the LA Dodgers. And over three seasons with the LA Dodgers, he picked all the wrong players and made them a worse team because he only saw the math and he didn't listen to his scouts at all. So this is not an indictment of Fran. This is just me trying to describe what Fran does, why Fran is good, and where Fran might struggle.
Numbers never lie, Mark, but to your point, they don't always tell the full story, and that context is needed. So to your point, is Porik asking the right questions, or is everything being considered? Fundamentally, regardless of whether or not you want to place blame on Fran's approach to analytics that are why they went after Kevin Cabral or Andreas Maxu or whomever, Mark, there's just every single person at this point in the club has either been hired by Pork, like has either been after Pork, so Pork hired them, or Pork hired the person who then hired them, or they have been around long enough to where there's been a contract that has been up for negotiation and the club has agreed to retain them. So any blame that you want to put on Fran for either his approach or his talent or his experience or his background and the pros and cons that come with them have to come with the context that Pork Smith handpicked him, in the same way that Pork Smith handpicked Anthony Hudson, Robin Fraser, etc. And so that is where, Mark, I'm seeing increasingly for a lot of fans, there's not a trust, not necessarily that like the Rapids way was a bad idea or that that pivot wasn't necessary for where the club was at that time. It's similar to where Spurs was at last offseason, where there's no faith in the process, there's no faith in the Rapids way because there's no faith in the personnel. And in that, Pork deserves more responsibility because of his failings in the people that he – in what he's done directly or in the people that he has appointed in those roles, and the feeling that everybody else is seemingly expendable but not him from what we can tell publicly. And I increasingly wonder who all is going to be involved in that coaching approach. Are we going to see a more analytics approach, Mark, to where then Fran is involved as well? Is Pork going to take a hands-on approach? Do we start to see ownership get a little bit more involved in that as well? Well, in ways that we have seen that with some of the other KSC entities. That's questions. Hopefully we'll get some not too ambiguous president speak answers to tomorrow at 11:30. Two more Ask HDHLs. Mark, I'll take one. I'll throw one to you. Jerry Rome asks, it seems to me that Kellen Acosta, that trading Kellen Acosta in January 2022 was the beginning of the end for Robin. Was there a way at the time for the Rapids FO to keep Acosta? Yes, there was, Jerry, but not based on what Kellen's clearly wanted. Just to refresh everybody's memory, that trade to LAFC netted the Rapids $550K in 2022 GAM, $550K in 2023 GAM. There were performance incentives up to $400K in general allocation money. Kellen Acosta was traded when he was guaranteed for 2022, expected to be on the World Cup squad in Qatar, and then had a club option for 2023. Obviously, LAFC picked that up. He is a free agent going into this offseason. Jerry, Kellen is available for MLS free agency, and in theory he's out of contract. He could go sign on a free anywhere in Europe. Kellen made it clear that he thought he had done well enough by the club and wanted an opportunity in Europe. It didn't really work out. He was even his agent and his representation were even offered, like, go find a club that's interested in you. And the only thing that they really found, I never nailed out what country or what tier this was it was a free loan with an option to buy. And simply put, at that point, for the Rapids, seeing as someone who they didn't think was interested in re-signing with the Rapids after 2023, they did not see, they couldn't let him walk for nothing. So then at that point it was, let's trade him for what we can get. He wants Europe. Europe wasn't an option. He doesn't have a right to say no to a trade that is within the league. Let's get max domestic assets and then see, and then he's no longer our problem. And I think it's a valid question, Mark. Does LAFC lose him? Could the Rapids assign him to a new contract? And I don't know, Jerry, that there was enough money that was going to make him re-sign to be in MLS longer, knowing that he wants to be in Europe for the 2026 World Cup. I think Kellen's had that on his mind for several years now that predates January 2022. I don't think there was a way to keep him as soon as he didn't want to resign. What I don't understand from a Rapids standpoint is every single time that they've had a distressed asset and they bet on the player, at that time it was paying off. Why not bet on him having a baller 2022, helping the Rapids succeed, going to the World Cup, and then off of that World Cup stock, picking up the option, and then just fielding all the offers in January of 2023. Ultimately, Acosta didn't get a lot of opportunities in Qatar. Maybe his most meaningful impact, Mark, was him decking Gareth Bale so he didn't score on a half-court shot against Matt Turner to win the game against Wales as well. But I still think you could have sold him in January and gotten comparable value. But maybe, Jerry, the Rapids in a vacuum will be proven right in Kellen leaving for free. But yeah, that was maybe not the – there were other underlying issues, but that's the one trade from a guy from 2021. Even in a vacuum, I can't forgive with how they approached it. And again, so many of the issues with what set up Robin's downfall was not who they departed with or how they moved on from 2021 players. It's then how they've reacted to with their recruitment sense. Last case, Ask HCHL, Mark, I will throw to you, comes from our friend Jody Robbins, who asks, with Smith saying that this team should be playing better, which of our players would be starting on other MLS teams? I say Gutman and probably Keegan for a few teams, maybe Ronan for a few bad teams. Maybe our players wouldn't even be on the roster of other MLS teams. Mark, right now, how many Rapids are starting for the other bubble MLS team, fully healthy, how many of those players are starting?
Woof. That's a brutally, disappointingly depressing question. Navarro's a bench guy. Rubio probably starts. Ronan is probably off the bench. Gutman probably starts. Hard to tell about Max Hu. He's been so up and down. It's hard to tell whether the team is bad around him and he's bad, or whether he's just not quite what the team called for. So right now it looks like 2.5 players would start, which is, that's a really good sign of why Robin Fraser failed. Yeah, he probably should have gotten more out of these guys than he did. You know, 7th place, 9th place, 11th place, I can understand, but dead last in the league is pretty bad. So I don't know. I'll say 2.5 players.
I'll say more than you, Mark. I'll agree with Jody that I think Gutman and Rosenberry, maybe Keegan, not for a lot of teams or teams at the top, but certainly if anything happened to, well, Kai Wagner plays on the other side of the pitch, I think. But I think Keegan's in there. Gutman, absolutely. Connor Ronan, I think, in the right, for the team that's looking for a midfielder like him, absolutely. Fully healthy, Jack Price starts in the majority of MLS teams. Same thing for Diego Rubio. Fully healthy, I think, William Yarbrough for the right team from a goalkeeper standpoint, Mark. Someone who's looking more for a communicator, a shot stopper, a leader rather than a play out of the back goalkeeper. He's certainly in that conversation. None of the other attackers right now, other than Rubio. I think in the right situation for a team that prioritizes domestic players in the attack, I think there are other teams this season in MLS that Cole Bassett could have gone to and found more success and more joy. I don't think it's the majority of teams in MLS. I agree it's a 50-50 on Max Hu, depending on what they're looking for and depending on his form, really. I don't know that it's much else in that regard, Mark. I don't think there's any other midfielders. And I will table my answer on Navajo and Tavares until we have a little bit more data. But yeah, you're looking over under, Mark. I'm struggling to get to 4 or 5 at this point, and a lot of those I'm saying on conditions that it's the right team. None of these guys really are going to LAFC and starting. Certainly none of them are going to Miami and starting. FC Cincinnati, none at this point. You know, the teams in the top third of MLS right now, I think you're looking at 1 or 2 guys at the right position where they're just looking at a slight upgrade from who they have right now. Shall we get out of here?
Indeed.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter, X, whatever it is now, at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPullard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL or email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Check out all of our written work, Rapids specific. For Mark, you can go to our Substack, holdingtheHighline.substack.com. For me, mostly burgundywave.com. We will have the audio from the press conference tomorrow. It might already be out by the time you are listening to us with Porik Smith. And then depending on how interesting it is, Mark, I think the listeners, I think most people in the Rapids community were able to listen to that and then make their own conclusions about what was said and the way it was said and everything. But if there's any key conclusions I have that are worth tacking on 2 or 3 minutes of audio, I will include that. If nothing else, you can check us out on Twitter for our hot takes and, boilerplate, bullet point responses to what's going on in that regard. So thank you very much for listening to Holding the Highline, listeners, and we'll see you next week to preview the start of the Crystal Era with a game against the Bruce Arena-less New England Revolution.
Peace!
Enough said.